We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the lands and waters where we're recording from, the Worimi and Wanarua peoples. We acknowledge the Worimi and Wanarua elders, both past and present.
Who is on the field for the Newcastle Knights? Darren Tracy's first touch of the footy. Now Andrew John. Tries a little hole himself. He's close. Right. Reaches out. That's a try to Andrew John. Bruce Brick from the little halfback. And that's a good reward for a great game in his debut match for the Newcastle Knights in first grade. Andrew John scores the try and that should wrap it up for the night.
Coming to you live from Worimi and Wanneroo Land, this is the Bay 53 podcast, part of the Sports Best Friends podcasting network, brought to you by your friends Bretto and the K-Dog. Round one has completed for the 2024 season in the NRL. Alas, the Knights men's team have not delivered the result that we wanted, and upon completion of round one, the Knights are back where they usually find themselves, under pressure. There's lots to talk about in rugby league. Bretto, that's deflating. That's just, you and I were at the game on Thursday night, and like anger, upset, like there were, of all the negative emotions for me that were really prevalent after the game, deflated is it was the primary one, like 99% of the emotion that I was feeling. And in a lot of ways that that deflated feeling, it's possibly some of the worst I felt coming out of a night's game. Tough game on Thursday night.
Yeah, the air certainly came out of the balloon, didn't it? It was one of those weird nights where the crowd was really up for it, but then we were so flat the whole game that I reckon the air had come out of the stadium by 20 minutes into the first half.
So it's actually really funny. It's funny you should say it that way. I probably didn't start to feel it until about 10 minutes into the second half. And the only reason is because, like we'd been saying it all week, we knew everyone who follows rugby league knew what the Canberra Raiders were going to do on Thursday night. And you and I even said, we know how they're going to play. And they played exactly how we thought they had. And that still gave me an air of it didn't diminish my expectations because I thought, well, we knew that this was coming. The Knights knew that this was coming. We're prepared for it this time. And at only 2 points behind, gathering a bit, I just thought, no, we're in this. And halftime came at the perfect time for us, just to regather our thoughts, just to freshen up a bit so that we could come out and steamroll them, which is what I thought was going to happen in the second half. But you are right. There was that sort of feeling halfway through the first half where you definitely got uneasy. And I think I looked at you a couple of times and you sort of tried to ignore me a couple of times because, yeah, you could just sense there was something in the air that night that was it just wasn't right.
Yeah, it was sort of the no try, like correct decision. But to me, that was the balloon sort of letting the air out. Mm-hmm. Like, We just worked our way back into the game. KP produces that. The crowd roars for 5 seconds, and we realize it's no try. And to me, like, the crowd definitely went flat after that. And I think the team went flat. Even though it was only 8-6 at halftime, we did eventually score. That, to me, changed the whole sort of mindset of the crowd, the team, everything. Like, everyone just went, oh, maybe this is not going to just be like last year where we just click and things roll. And early in the second half, I just went, nah, this is definitely not going to just click for us. And, yeah, it just got worse from there.
Former Newcastle Knight, though he never played first grade, Zach Hosking opened the scoring. I mean, in hindsight, that sort of set the tone for the rest of the game, the way the game went. Not because, I mean, you know, 60% of their try scorers were from the Hunter region, but it was more a case of, once something like that went against you, in hindsight, you sort of look at it and you go, well, it really was only going to go one way. And particularly the way he scored as well, like a second rower catching a kick.
And it's a set play from them. Like, they do that. Yeah. They do that play every week. Like, it's not, you know, that's not where you kick it to a guy no one expects you to kick it to and he just gets a run at it. Everyone, that's Canberra's play. It's to kick it from within about 10 metres of the sideline, and the center and the back row on that side just charge a million miles an hour, and they just hope for the best. That they do it every week.
So I mean, I'm always a big believer that mistakes in isolation, you only look at them in the context of what comes after them, just like a loss. Like, we're going to find out a lot about this Knights men's team, about what this loss really means by the way they perform in the following game. But the mistakes that led to the Zach Hosking try, or in particular the defensive reads that resulted in that, like, I was so down on Jackson Hastings for that, like, just so down on him. But at the time, because, you know, he sort of seems to do an escort for nobody, that if anything creates the opening.
He opened the space. He opened the space up. Because by Jacko sort of drifting out wide, not only blocked off their center, it blocked off Bradman. Yeah. So we had no one to run at it.
But, I mean, again, that mistake in isolation, I can accept if that just happens and you move on from it. I mean, I don't want to be too critical. Unfortunately, we're going to highlight Jackson Hastings in this instance and, I guess, onto the rest of his game. But that mistake that he sort of made defensively really was, when you look at it now, a precursor to the way he performed for the rest of the game. Like, he was really poor. And I don't say that to be critical because I'm like, well, I need to find a scapegoat. But you and I have been saying all offseason, you know, his body's going to be fit. His mind's going to be fresh. We're going to see the real Jackson Hastings this year. And I hope we didn't, because he was disappointingly poor.
I've got something to say on that later when we analyze the tactics a bit more. Yeah. Something I picked up in the replay that, yeah, I think is, that'll explain to that Jacko stuff later.
Right. So we'll get through the rest of the second half. I mean, KP was not at his best. The statistics suggest otherwise. Ran for 190 meters. You know, he only missed one tackle. He was otherwise thereabouts. I think the late shot he took really early on affected him, because we knew everyone in the crowd was saying, well, with his history, da-da-da-da-da. But I think once Hudson Young rattled him with the dog shot that got him sin-binned, those were the best 10 minutes off the field that Hudson Young spent. Because I think after that, KP took himself out of the game for whatever reason. And I know, because good friend of the pod, Harvey G, has said to us, well, we shouldn't be a team that's relying on miracle ball where we just pass it to our star player. I don't want that either. But there's a difference between looking for your star player and chucking him the ball and going, will you go and do something? And your star player throwing himself into the attack going, I'm here, give me the ball, this is what I'm going to do. You know what I mean? We expect the latter of KP, and in the end, he didn't do either. He just sort of took himself out in the second half, and I just wonder if those hits he took in the first half impacted him.
Yeah, and I said to you in that first half, the real issue for me was, yeah, that shot, that no doubt affected him mentally, no doubt at all. But it was the fact that their centre would always charge up and whack him a few times. Mm. Like, if we're switched on, we should walk through that hole every time. Because every time their centre would launch when Jacko still had the ball in his hands, Jacko at his best just sees that, throws the ball in behind him, and we walk in untouched. And that was sort of right in line where we sit in Bay 53 at that end. And I was sitting there watching it going, why are we not just holding the ball and walking in? Like, it was so obvious that their centre was charging out as soon as that play was run that way. Like, it frustrated me so much because it was obvious to us, and Jacko clearly couldn't see it. But Jacko's done that play a million times for us. And I thought I'll fix it in the second half. The coaches will tell him, Greeny will tell him, and nothing changed. It just it frustrated me.
And so you've sort of highlighted, I mean, that in and of itself is a small part of our attack, in terms of there was this reluctance to, I hate this term, plays eyes up footy. But, I mean, overall, over the whole 80 minutes, not
that's
even just...
Eyes up footy is just intelligent footy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's playing what you see.
Correct. But even that was indicative of an attack that was just dysfunctional for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that they didn't know what to play, what was in front of them. They just didn't know what to do with the ball when they had it. And that was so disappointing.
That simple left side switch last year, where we'd walk in, you know, easy on the edge. We couldn't even get it timed right, let alone make a break doing it. We couldn't even time it right. Like, it just, every time we do it, a ball would go to the ground, a ball would go behind someone. Greg would be too far forward, he'd be too far back. KP wouldn't be there the right. Like, it just, the timing was so far out. It's round one, I get that. but it's all the same guys making that play. Like, I know that you've replaced Lockie on that side, but the back row is still running the same line. Nothing changes. You still got the back row on the exact same line. And we couldn't even get it timed up when it was Jacko to KP to Brabham to Greg. We couldn't even get that sorted. And like, it just, as I said, it's round one, but it was a real concern for me, like just how clunky it was. Yeah.
So I was really critical of Reece Walsh for not having the ability to adapt to teams that had, I mean, I maybe figured him out, or maybe he didn't have the platform to do what he's known, what he's used to doing. I think the criticism of the Knights this time is not so much that they couldn't adapt. They simply could not perform what we know that they could do. Now, granted, the Raiders were probably ready for it. I don't think the Raiders did much, particularly in defence, to force us into error. I just think our timing was so poor on Thursday night that the longer the game went on, the more it went into our head. We were just misfiring, and we were just playing into the Raiders' hands.
Hey, question. Do you reckon that first trial hurt us in the sense that, so we made all the mistakes early, and then it just clicked and we went bang, bang, bang? Do you reckon we'll just wait for that to happen on Thursday, where we made those early mistakes, and the crowd, the team, everyone was just going, well, this will just click eventually, and we'll go bang, bang, bang? Because that's how it felt. It just felt like everybody involved was just waiting for this to click. And the more it didn't click, the more frustrated everybody got. And it just, I don't know, like, I just feel like that first trial has given the club, the supporters, all of us, a false sense that we can just turn this on and off as we want.
See, I actually hope that's the case, because my bigger concern from Thursday night was that the team that I was watching, I really hope that's what was happening, because that to me is an easy fix.
Yeah,
that anticipation where you're like, well, that's all right if we make mistakes, it'll click eventually. That's actually something easy to fix, because the coaches can sit them down and remind them this only works if you apply yourselves. So I hope that's the case, because my bigger concern on Thursday night, particularly in that second half, was that they didn't trust themselves anymore. They were actually playing like a team that for whatever reason, no longer backed themselves to do what they knew that they could do. And once that doubt creeps in, that's a bigger issue. So I will kind of say
that round one, everyone says, why the Storm unbeatable in round one? You know what's unbeatable in round one? Because the Storm don't. So what you're good at the previous year isn't automatic in round one. Yeah, you can still be good at it the next year. But round one, it won't be perfect. You know, you'll make mistakes, but you'll go back to the well. You'll eventually get it right. But you'll also just get there through effort. And to me, the real concern was that once that didn't work, the effort went out of the team.
Mm.
That to me is the greater concern, the attitude towards it.
And this is where I think that doubt started to creep in, because you and I had said all week this idea that we're ready. We saw in the home final what the Raiders will bring. They're going to bring that again, but we're prepared for it this time. But it's almost like that preparation started to work against them, because I don't know, the team that I was just sort of watching out there after about 20 minutes or half an hour, it's almost like they got confused by it all. And I thought, no, now is the time you step it up. Because Canberra have shown their hand. They've shown exactly what they're going to do. We've shown that we're good enough to absorb that pressure. I think that was actually my biggest concern, is that after half an hour, I thought we'd start to step it up, and the exact opposite happened. And yeah, it was so disappointing to watch, because everything that we come to know about this team last year, that, you know, we get through the opening, we hold our own, we finish strong. They got the first part right, but then they went into reverse after that, and that was just a really disappointing way to kick off the season.
So I had to think about, when I watched the replay, I was having to think about that exact thing, you know, like Canberra, we knew Canberra were going to do this. This is what they did to us in the final. Yet the final, we came back. What the difference was in that, thinking about that final now, and just looking at a few of the stats from that game, we were poor. We were so red hot that we could just go bang bang like in our sleep, and we had periods where we just went bang 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 score. We'll pour for another 20 minutes, bang bang score. You know, we just kept doing that because we were so red hot with how we were playing our game. But I think we were every bit as poor, if not more poor, in that final. Whereas on Saturday, Thursday, being round one, we just couldn't do that. You know, you can't beat Paul and just get it to click eventually because it's round one. You know, you're not in form. Your timing's not right. It's hot. It's sweaty. And I think that was, as I said, I think if anything, we probably played as badly, if not worse, last year. But as I said, we're just so hot in attack that we could dig our way out of it. And on our Thursday, that didn't work. The other thing I noticed, and I'll go into the tactics of a bit now, was watching the replay. So, and I said he was critical when we played Phoenix at lock, because I don't think that works. It didn't work with Kurt Mann. I don't think it works with Phoenix. So I watched the replay. We had four halfbacks on the field at one time. Like you've got Kogger is a halfback at hooker. You've got Phoenix, who, even though he's a hooker now, but he's still an instinct. He's still a halfback by instinct. He's been a halfback his whole life by the last 12 months. Mm. Then you've got your actual two halves. So what you've got four guys that think like a halfback. So I would deliberately watch to see, and they literally got in each other's way. Like I could see Jacko getting frustrated with Phoenix not giving him the ball where he would get the ball. So Phoenix would get it and play like a halfback. He would take three or four steps, you know, move the ball in his hands and then throw the pass. Whereas Jacko's just like, when Adam Elliott does it, he's a lock forward. He just gives me the ball. And then I think that then affected KP, because KP's getting no good ball. And I could see him getting frustrated because the amount of times we had three on two overlaps and KP didn't get the ball. I've seen twice at least him throw his head back in disgust because he knew we had him dead. The four halves on the field does not work. And Adam O'Brien insists on doing it. And it's going to be to his detriment because it's going to get him fired if it doesn't get fixed.
So Phoenix Crossland, I think, is probably playing for his place in the team this weekend. Reports are that the great Barry Tui has reported that Jaden Brayley will be fit for round three. I think regardless of what we do up in Townsville, Brayles will come straight back into the side.
I actually think Cogger will be the one out, because I think that Adam O'Brien will realise that Jack Cogger is a halfback too much by instinct. I think Jack Cogger is your pure emergency hooker.
Yep.
Whereas Phoenix has played enough hooker now, where you know we can call him a hooker. I think I personally would play Cogger in the starting team, but I think that next week Cogger's out because as I said, that many halfbacks on the field does not work.
Do you think how long do you think Gamble and Hastings have now to re-cement themselves? I mean, are they after last week? Are they a game to game basis?
They get 3 weeks. If we're 0-3, one of those two are gone.
Yeah, and I think based on what we saw Thursday night, I think it's probably based on what we saw Thursday night and against the Storm. Unfortunately, it's probably Gamble. He's just that grit, that determination, that pure footy player that you, me, and again, good friend of the pod, Harvey G, loves.
Gamble's a great additional piece when you're going well.
Yeah.
He won't dig you out of a hole.
You are listening to the Bay 53 podcast.
Hey, I want to talk to you a bit more about the Raiders, if only because I'm going to backhandedly compliment them in terms of I think they nailed their tactics, which were simple footy, forwards run as hard as they possibly can. Jamal Fogarty, kick the ball as high as you can and grind the Knights down. Brett, I've got to be honest with you. I've moved on in life from the idea that, and we'll call it the professionalism of the sport, which is essentially playing for penalties. I've moved on from the mindset that stuff, like, it just pisses me off, and I hate. Like, I've just accepted that that's the reality of the professional game that we sort of watch, and I've accepted that that's what Ricky Stewart teams are going to do. But having said that, like, do we need to be better about that? You know, for the playing for the crusher tackles and, you know, faking injury every chance they get to get a replay on that. Should we be better, or do you think the game should be doing something to say to itself, we've got to clear this up. We can't have blokes just grabbing for their neck every time there's a tackle. Because I'm of the opinion, look, that's happened now. Opposition teams that play the Raiders have got to be smarter to combat that happening.
There needs to be, so essentially the guys were laying down for the high tackle, weren't they? So the NRL went, okay, if you lie down for high, and we, you get a penalty for a high tackle, we're going to send you off for HIA. So there now needs to be a situation where, okay, you've hurt your neck. A neck's a part of the body that, you know, that if you've got an injury there, we need to know straight away. So guess what? You've just held your neck. We're going to give you the penalty for the crusher, but you've now got to go and get that assessed by a doctor for 10 minutes. Because we can't be liable that you've hurt your neck and you're going to play on with an injury in your neck.
But doesn't that then compound – doesn't that make everybody want to hold their neck in a tackle? Because essentially you're getting a free 10-minute
interchange. No, you don't get – if you come back on the field, you, it's the same as the HIA, you lose your interchange.
Okay.
Because I guarantee you, Joe Tarpany is not laying down because Canberra can't have him off the field for the next 10 minutes. Because once when he's off the field, they're rubbish in the middle.
Can I put it to you as well? Do you think there needs to be more on the video ref looking for actual crushing motion in the player? And the only reason, and as stupid as that sounds, the only reason I ask is if you look, because the Joe Tapanay one is the one that comes straight to mind. And I gave it to him when he got subbed off just in front of Bay 53. And I absolutely gave it to him. And credit to him, he heard me, looked up at me and smiled and gave me the thumbs up, which only made me angrier. But having said that, the Joe Tapanay one is an interesting one because he actively burrows his head as hard as
he can
into Leo Thompson.
Yeah. It's a great tactic because if Leo doesn't crush him, he scores.
But this is the thing is that, because words here matter. You've said if Leo crush, I don't think at any stage does Leo crush him. Leo holds his ground as the player drives his head even further.
See, Joe was smart. If you watch it again, once Joe, top of Joe's head contacts Leo, Joe then dips his head. So all Leo's weight goes on the back of Joe's neck.
And this is...
So the video ref sees that and goes, well, he's crushed him.
Yeah. And this is where I just think there can be more nuance. Because this is always the issue with rugby league, is that they don't allow for nuance when they want to police something.
They forgotten what a crusher is. Now they've got the point where any pressure on the neck is a crusher. And it's not. A crusher was when you dump a guy on the ground and then you fall with your weight on top of him, forcing his neck to bend. That's a crusher. That's why it's called a crusher, because you're crushing your weight down on him. Mm. Him getting his neck caught up underneath you because that's the way the tackle's fallen is not a crusher tackle. It's not even a crusher tackle in the rules. They've just got this weird idea now that any time there's pressure on the neck, that's a crusher. And it's not. Like they're essentially trying to use the crusher tackle as a way of stopping the wrestling. Well, I guess I'm telling you now, if the wrestling goes out and you can't do that, that's fine. But I hope you're ready for every game to be 50 to 46.
I was really proud of, I think it was Jacob Saifidi, really giving it to Xavier Savage. And again, because I sort of figure, well, if they're going to pretend they're hurt, hit them as cleanly as you can and really make them earn that. And I love the hit that he put on him where Xavier stayed down again to try and get the video ref to have a look to see if he can, squeeze a penalty out of it. And I was actually really proud of the game of the ref who looked at it and go, there's nothing wrong with that tackle. Just because you're hurt, I'm not going to look for a reason to find that your head's been hit. And I thought that was a really good, clean hit by JSAF. It certainly got the crowd on their feet. Tyson Frizzell was first try scorer for the Knights on the night. Of course, we had a man advantage by that stage. It really disappoints me once again that there's any question as to whether Hudson Young should have been binned. And I say it again, if any other player other than Kalen Ponga is being taken out there, you'd have screams for weeks on the sideline. But again, I maintain because it was Kalen Ponga, the idea is that, well, he's gone down soft or, you know, there's nothing in it and there's any argument that Hudson Young should have been sent. That is a clear sin bin. Bordering on send off any day of the week, twice on Sunday.
I just don't get the argument. The argument was he didn't get him in the head. Well, okay, you didn't get him in the head. That's why he didn't go for HIA. But he still cocked his elbow and hit him high with it. Like he got him at the top of the shoulder, you know, an inch higher, and he clocks him clean on the jaw and probably smashes his jaw to pieces. Like that's lucky from Hudson. Hudson's not that bloody greatest shot that he can cock an elbow and get a guy deliberately an inch under his jawline. Like it's just I'm so tired of the fact that teams do it to KP, and then not only do they not get suspended for it, everybody defends it.
Yeah.
Everybody defends it. And yet we get guys who go down and hold their neck for 5 seconds and get a penalty, and that's play on. Like, I just I can't deal with it. But the problem is, Bud, and I'll maintain this, we're too soft in that regard. Our forwards don't need – why are they copping that? You don't lay something out cold with the right hand. You'll get 10 minutes in the sin bin and maybe a week. Fucking do it.
And what's even more disappointing about that is that you and I, after the Storm game, we were quite impressed with how much they were taking it to Kamakamitha, where he wanted to get it on our forwards. Like, no, you're not having any of that. It's almost like we wanted to be preseason champions, and now we've forgotten how to play, and we've reverted to the old model once the games have kicked off that really mattered. I think that was the bigger disappointment for me, is that we went into the season saying our forwards have come in saying they want to be the big dogs now, and they the first opportunity to do that, and they failed the test. They wilted under pressure. It was really disappointing stuff.
It's just like, I know I'm a dinosaur. I get that. But if your star player, because Hudson Young does it every time we play him. Because I get Hudson Young. He hates the Knights because we dumped him because he was a drug cheat. I get him. He hates the Knights. I get him. That's the reality. Like, you can try and sue me, Hudson, but you failed a drug test. The club sacked you for it. You're a drug cheat, mate. Same with Bronson Sherry's one. But you can come in with the shits. You can come out and get your junk try that you all know you're going to get because you're a coward. But our forwards can't just cop that. Like it's just a drive. Like, why is Heather here? If Heather's not going to start laying people, why is he here? What does he offer? Like, I don't want to hear it's ill discipline. No, it's not. Ill discipline is when Daniel Safidi knows that Denny Levi does nothing but run from dummy half, lets him run from dummy half under the sticks and score untouched. That's ill discipline. That's ill discipline. Ill discipline is not defending your $1.5 million captain because someone dogshotted him. That's rugby league. Like, it just drives me mental. Like, girls have more fortitude than that. Every time Tamika gets hit hard, Caitlin Johnson wants to put someone on their backside. They got more balls than any of those guys ever wished to have. It's fucking disgusting. Like, I reckon Knights old boys sit and watch that and go, what the fuck has become of this club? It's fucking disgusting.
That was a nice. I didn't. We didn't plan that rant. I enjoyed that. I was. You didn't tell us to strap in though. But don't worry. I got a few words in there. I was like, oh, I know what's coming. Hey, that play aside. Like, I mean, that aspect of that play aside. That's probably an unfortunate element to. I mean, an all round disappointing play, particularly given the way it finished, with Gamble under the posts, but no try for unfortunately correctly ruled obstruction. Bretto, can I ask you, mate, do you think forwards / any players now, I mean, the up and down of it now is that if you're in front of a bloke who's made a run, you just can't stand there with your arms up in the air. You have to do more. Like, whether it's running, back to get out of the way, whether it's running to the side to get out of the way, players have got to get it into their head now that standing there with your – because when you stand there and put your hands up, you're side-posting. Here I am. Here's the blocker, yeah. So,
you have to keep moving. So when KP makes half a break, what the guy has to do is either need to run out of the way, which is probably nearly impossible. So what you do is you keep moving with the play. If he just kept staying in front of KP and staying out of people's way, that's fine. Because he was always in front of the play. But the moment you stop still, you're a target. The defender's going to go, well, if I run into him, they can't score because he's in front of the ball. And all of it's irrelevant. Like, that's the thing. Like, that guy could have been 30 metres in front of the ball. But a defender ran into him in front of the ball. It's a penalty. You can't stop. If you're in front of the ball, you have to get your feet moving. And once again, it's laziness. It's ill-discipline. It's the shit that smart teams do that we haven't got right now for 20 years. Oh, my God.
That's exactly how frustrating that was. But like I said, we went into halftime only 2 points behind. I thought Tyson Frizzell did score a really good try. And funnily enough, that was the reason I got hope from that try, our one-man advantage aside, was I thought it was really weak defense by the Raiders. And I'm not saying I thought, well, they'll just fall off now. But what I did think was, see, guys, this is how easy it is. We didn't score that try necessarily because of a one-man advantage. We scored because we played quick, sharp, forward running with motion football that broke a soft defense if we put them on the back foot. And I just thought we'd get that confidence from it there to remember, oh, this is how we play footy. that I thought we'd go into halftime, we'd get the halftime talk to say, hey, remember what you did there? That's our team. And I just thought we'd kick on from there. And it's, oh, just, it really is a kick to the nuts when you get out. And of all fucking players, Danny fucking Levi scoring like, from dummy half.
I would get it if that guy, if defending someone with something. Daniel has played with Danny Levi's entire career.
Oh.
Of all people should know, Danny Levi's going to run from dummy half for no reason. It's Daniel Safidi. Like, and the problem is, but you go into halftime, your tactics are down by two. As you said, on the back of a try guard, when we look how easy it is, fellas. But you let that in, and the air comes out of the balloon again.
Now, you've sort of pointed out Dan Safidi. I completely agree with you. I thought Dan Safidi, I thought it was a combination of slow market offense from Heatho, but poor reading of the play from Dan Safidi, because those two unfortunate elements combined create this opening where Danny Levi is like, holy shit, this is fucking Christmas. Like, it was just so easy for him. And again, that's what really disappointed me, was Harry Grant had shown us in the preseason, oh, this is how you score out of the ruck. And you and I were sitting there going, well, that's not really, we don't need to. We were wrong. We need to go back and remind ourselves how to defend around the ruck, because this is now happening too consistently. Like, that was really, really poor. And, you know, it just put us on the back foot so quickly again. Any good work we'd done to finish the first half is immediately gone. And, you know, as you and I noticed, as they came back on to kick off for the second half, we're sort of counting players, and there's three players on the bench, and we're trying to figure out which forward is out or injured, and we suddenly realise Tuala is out, Lucas is in the centres. So we're already reshuffled, and, you know, to make that simple error around the ruck, oh, just the second half started, it just could not have started any worse.
You're right. Like, Heatho's market defense was poor there, but Daniel's the origin player. Like, I get that as a senior player too. But why are they not there screaming at each other going, Levi dummy half, Levi dummy half? Like, it just, if you remember, he did the same thing when he's playing for Manly against us. And I blew up that day too. And I'm just like, how do we not know? Like, the worst thing about Danny Levi's game is the fact that you can have an 8-man overlap on the trial and he'll still go for dummy half. That's what he does. That's how many times have we screamed at him for it, you know? Yeah. When he did it at the Knights. Yeah. Like, why are the two guys, Heatho and Daniel, just going to each other, Levi dummy half, Levi dummy half, you know? Like, Jesus. It's like we were watching, could see it happening. It just, it's so frustrating that every year we make the same dumb mistakes.
Like I said, so Tuala's going to be out for a few weeks. He didn't come back on for the second half. He's done a quad. Do we know if it's a quad tear or a quad strain?
I haven't seen anything.
We had a discussion about Tuala in the middle of the first half, predominantly around he had a ball in what you considered to be open space that Dom Young would have scored in, but it was a scenario that I sort of read it where I think the Raiders had, I don't think it mattered who was there. I think they had so many numbers. We'll talk about that a little more if you want. But what I do want to talk about is his first half stats were sensational. 8 runs, 103 metres. You know, okay, only 18 kicked return metres. That's okay. But that's
from kicking 40, him, that's why.
Sorry?
They weren't kicking to him, not kicking to Marjorie.
And he was making meters. So he had a really, he finished with more kick, more meters run than Bradman Best for the entire game. It disappoints me so much that there's been all of this criticism from some fans after the game about Tuala. And I'm like, he only played half a game, and the half a game he did play was fine. Like, I don't think we lost anything by having him out there. And what I can tell you is we absolutely did lose a lot by not having him out there for the second half, because the two daggers to the half the two daggers to the heart that ultimately ended the game were scored out where he would have been defending. So I feel like criticism of Tuala based on that 40-minute performance is really poor. It just seems so unwarranted.
Yeah, that break, that wasn't a criticism of Inari. And the thing is that Dom Young and Jackson Saab are probably the only two guys at school of that. But the point I was trying to make was...
No. I know you were not being critical of him. I know you were sort of saying, look, people might be right. That might be where we missed Dom Young. No, I absolutely know that's what you were saying.
And then that's what, you know, and that's what I said, you know, like there's probably four or five tries a year Dom would score and Inari can't score. yeah, that's going to be the difference. But there's probably times where an Ariel score where Dom would drop it. Yeah. You know, that's what, yeah, that was kind of the point there. But you're right. Now they attacked the Nari side because, yeah, we had a back row defending in the centres. We had Gags who he's played plenty of wing, but he's lost 3 yards of pace. So, you know, you can a guy with the speed of Xavier Savage can certainly, you know, take advantage of him on that edge. But yeah, Eddie Christopher was Nari is ridiculous because he done his quad about 10 minutes ago, I think, in that half. So he only really played 30 minutes. You know, the last 10 minutes he was limping around, apparently. So his numbers were fine. Like, yeah, there's no, can be no criticism of Nara. And I think Tom Jenkins this week will do the same sort of job on that wing.
Dylan Lucas, you and I said that the spotlight was probably going to be the harshest on him. Look, unfortunately, he won't play this weekend. I haven't heard any reports as to whether or not it's any more
JJA
than...
JJA stand down. JJA
yeah,
stand
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, that's it.
I thought he had a great game, though. I thought everything we saw from him in the 60 minutes that we did see of him, you know, out of position for a third of it, I was really happy with what Dylan had to offer. Just quickly going back to that first half, though, I've put it out there, and I haven't really got any responses, but I do feel like a player has not been sin-binned for a hip-drop tackle since Lockie Fitzgibbon against the Dolphins last year. And it really, it fucking pisses me off because it wasn't just a questionable hip drop on Dylan late in the second half, late in the first half. It was an horrific.
It was a swing. It was a swing off him. Hip drop. And there probably was more sin bin late in that latency. But last year became the point where unless you pretty much break the guy's leg, you're not getting sin bin. And it went from, if you do any sort of hip drop, you go straight to the bin. And instead of just, you know, typically NRL, but instead of just finding the happy medium, it's got to go from one extreme to the other.
Well, it's like we really do need to get him back on, Harvey. Geez, feeding me all my lines tonight. But it's like he always said, the NRL is never about targeting an area to maintain standards. They just pick an area that they want to highlight for a few months or maybe for a season, and then they'll let that slide and move on to something else.
It really feels like if the right club whinges about something, they'll highlight it to prove they've done about it, you know? Like that's what it comes down to. Jacob Preston did the one against South on Easter. South went ballistic about it. So the NRL, okay, right, well, everyone that does one's going to get one.
I would love to say that I still had faith that we could turn it around after the Xavier Savage try, but I think once Xavier scored and Dylan Lucas hobbled off, that to me was really, I was like, this is not going to be our night. And I'd love to say that in hindsight, I was probably being a bit pessimistic. But the problem is that subsequent to that, there was nothing we did in attack. Nay, there was even a lot that we were doing, you know, in defence on our own line. Like you pointed it out. What was going on with KP and Greg Marju on the long kick from Jamal Fogarty that KP should have taken? And he sort of palms off responsibility to Greg, where Greg gets marched back into the in goal zone. Like, those are the things. Those are the things that this team did on Thursday night. We're in a split second. They just confirmed every criticism of them over the summer that you and I had spent so much time combating. Like, we look like idiots now because we look like bigger idiots now because they had the Knights had just confirmed so much of the doubt that so many critical people had about this team. And it was just moments like that where we make a nothing kick from the Raiders into an almost momentum changing sort of turning point in the game. And it's so frustrating to watch.
Yeah, that was poor from KP. Like, I get that Greg's the designated run back man. Yeah, so KP's not getting bashed. But one of two things happen there. KP either catches it like he should and give it to Greg on a wind up, or better still, we need something, catch the ball and have a run, mate. You've got a broken line. Canberra had a broken line coming down because of it was a long kick. So Canberra had, their fast guys had sprinted down, which eventually they got Greg with. But, you know, KP would have had a 20-meter running start at them. Like, do something, mate. Like, I'll never criticise KP, but $1.5 million, mate, at some stage you've got to go, I need to try and do something here. And I was down. Like, I very rarely bad KP, but I was really down on him. And
it was a long ride home that night, ladies and gentlemen.
I found some reasons why. That to me, that was not a good sign in round one.
I just love the game. But more than that, I love the community. If you're a fan of rugby league or the NRL, you'll love Big T's Tees. Unique, affordable, and made for fans. Find a link to the online store in the show notes below. You'd look good in one of Big T's Tees.
Okay, let's... Unfortunately, and it's so unfortunate about this fucking game as well, is that, I mean, Hudson Young has the final say on proceedings. But you know what really, I think you know what really irritated me after the game was, it was so funny to me, the reaction was, oh, well, this will show you Knights fans for overplaying, you know, over-celebrating like you'd won the grand final last year just for beating us in a week one semi. And I was like, the way you guys are carrying on, that loss obviously impacted you a lot more deeply than the win made us a lot happier. You know what I mean? Like, it's fairly clear. And again, we knew that the Raiders were going to come here with a point to prove. But I don't know. It just, it to me just reeked of that sort of small club mentality that, you know, they felt like it was that, like that, there was such an injustice done to them on the way that that game sort of finished, that they had such a big point to prove. You know what I mean? Like,
that's Ricky Ball. Like, that, I'm sure, like, we don't read the Canberra press. I'm sure in all the Canberra media, all the offseason's been going, we got robbed. We're going to get our revenge. Like, I have no doubt at all Ricky's been spinning that line the entire offseason.
I mean, where do we go? So where do we sort of go from the, you know, the disaster? Is disaster too strong a word for what happened on Thursday night?
Round one.
Where do we go then from a first round loss that puts unfortunate pressure for us, you know, coming into round two? Because funnily enough, we've seen this situation twice before. I mean, we've lost many opening round one games, but funnily enough, you know, we went into the 2001 season, which is the last time we won a premiership, high on this team. We were coming off a really strong final showing with a disappointing end, with a strong point to prove in the next season. We lost that home opener. You go back 12 months, you know, we probably had a bit more to prove in terms of saying that we're not the 14th place team that finished in 2022. We have a somewhat disappointing loss there. Both of those instances, we were able to turn it around and at least get a win on the board in round two. Bretto, Dick's on the table stuff. Is this team able to turn it around in 9 days to get a win up in Townsville?
Yeah, I'd be really confident, other than the fact that our record's so poor in Townsville. I'd be confident if we were going to what's an equivalent? If we're going to Parramatta, I'd be confident.
Hmm.
It's sort of, yeah, to me, I'm pretty confident we're going to bounce back. I just think that, yeah, as I said, I can't have confidence in Townsville. They showed that if you have any sort of weakness in your side, they'll exploit it. They showed that against the Dolphins. And I just, yeah, but I think we'll bounce back. And I was pointing out before we started recording that when you've got a 9-day turnaround or 6-day turnaround, you win 80 to 90% of those games won by that team. You know, and you take into and some of the all-time great upsets in recent years are because of things like that, differences in turnaround. Townsville negates that somewhat. You know, that they've got such a big advantage because it's going to be still daylight up there. You know, like it's going to be bloody hot. But no, but to me the concern is you go up there, you don't put in again and get blown off the park. And then you're in a strife. Like you essentially your confidence is a rock bottom, and you're coming back to Melbourne, who you know won't give you an inch.
We went to the Tiger. We went to Leichhardt last year. I remember you and I at the time, 12 months ago, were adamant. Well, the Tigers, because I think the Tigers had lost their opening game as well. In fact, I think they'd lost. They had their first two games of the season at Leichhardt. Anyway.
Yeah, they got through Leichhardt in round one, I think. Yeah.
And we were like, well, they don't lose two in a row in Leichhardt. The Knights the next weekend came out and put on a performance of such grit and determination that I think it's one of the most more underrated wins in our club's history. Team list dropped prior to us recording this evening. No surprises, which you and I sort of have said is always a surprise in and of itself. Are you surprised KPP starting as opposed to Cartwright?
Yeah, I want to talk about that, mate. So the KPP situation has really shocked me. Like, Adam O'Brien must be so super high on him, because I never, ever suspected that he would even start round one. Even without the toe injury, I thought Adam O'Brien would want to see, you know, it on the field before he'd put him in first grade. So then the toe injury happens, you know, the toe injury is discovered and that, you know, we sort of think, well, he's going to miss a few weeks, you know, all that happens. But then he plays on the bench in round one. Okay, cool. He gets called in, has to play 40 minutes, played an outstanding 40 minutes. Really, you know, worked his butt off, defended great. Did he miss either zero tackles or one miss? You know, great. Outstanding. But I was in my mind, well, they're going to, you know, he'll stay on the bench because Jed, who we know is, you know, has played first grade NRL for several years now, he'll come and he'll be the 60-minute guy on that edge. No, KPP straight in. And to me, that's so – we see him with Greg Margi last year. Adam O'Brien wants to see it. Now, he wants to see it with his own eyes in our structure before he'll put you in the team. But he must be so high on KPP that that he's thrown him straight into the starting team against a team where the strength of their team is their back row. Now they've got a lot of good players in the back. You know, it's going to be 90% humidity, a team that play fast. You sort of think, well, that's none of that's going to suit KPP, you know, getting used to NRL speed and not used to Australian weather. But he was good in that game in Fiji for the, you know, he played extended minutes and played well. So AOB's obviously seen what he wanted to see. It's absolutely shocked because I never for a moment thought we would see him starting in this team until at least maybe magic roundish.
20 effective tackles last weekend, none missed, one ineffective tackle. So he's rated at 95.24% tackle efficiency. What does that mean?
So the ineffective tackle is that you don't lock the ball up or you don't really stop
gotcha.
Him.
Gotcha. Yep.
You sort of, yeah, it's not a miss because you still got a hold of him. Yep. You don't actually stop him.
But like you said, he certainly didn't miss any tackles. Strong defensively, which is what we need at the moment. He ran for about 40. Oh no, sorry, that's just his post contact meter. He ran for about 89 meters in the end,
and which half is footy, you know, great to have footy.
Yeah. Okay, so I mean, I guess there must be something there that, like you said, O'Brien sort of sees and he's happy to. And history has sort of shown with O'Brien as well that he doesn't rush new people into the side.
No, I mean, that's right. And because we, like everyone said, well, he's a project. We're paying him a lot of money, but he's a project. You know, he's got this untapped potential, but he's not ready to play NRL yet. So we all sort of put, and Adam O'Brien is very conservative. He's like Craig Bellamy in that regard, you know, like you need to earn your spot in this team before I trust you. But yeah, he must have it. And we heard the whispers that he had a great offseason. It must have been an outstanding offseason.
Tom Jenkins comes in for Tuala. I think this gives me an opportunity to talk with you about the cup game as well. We won't dwell on it too much. The cup game, though, was poor, of which Tom Jenkins was also poor. We were very high on the depth coming into Thursday night. After Thursday night, not so much. But I mean, Tom Jenkins will be marking, I think, Murray Tuilagi.
I have thought about that, and I do have concerns.
Yeah, it's not great. The problem is that the Cowboys are really strong favourites going into this game, rightly so. I want to touch on a bit of, though, what you said about what they did to the Cowboys. I mean, sometimes all the glitters isn't gold. 43 to, I think, 18 in the end. They got over the Dolphins. And I want you to answer objectively. I don't want to really lay the boot into the Cowboys any more than I absolutely have to. But I mean, I really do. How much of that scoreline was the Cowboys showing us their credentials or the Dolphins just being utter dog shit? Because the Hammer, who's a player that you and I reluctantly rate because he is a Queensland and he plays for a geographically barren franchise. So we like the Hammer, and he was poor on Sunday. So how much of that 25-point margin is just the Dolphins completely and utterly shitting the bed, as opposed to the Cowboys flexing some premiership contention muscle.
Yeah, the Dolphins offered a little resistance. It actually proved to me what I suspected of the Cowboys. They are the biggest downhill skis in the competition.
Mm.
And I showed that last year where they conceded 60 against the Tigers, but then put 70 on them up there, you know. Like the Cowboys are, if you let them run and gun, they will run and gun. But if you drag them out of a street fight, they've got no backbone. Mm. And they've shown that. And their coaches, I think their coach is terrible, because if his A1 tactic doesn't work, they've got nothing. Absolutely nothing. If they don't get to play how they want to play. So to me, Sunday proved nothing other than I think the Dolphins this year are going to be what they thought they were going to be last year.
Can we talk a little bit about Taumalolo? Because I want to live the life that he's living, which is getting paid $1 million a year to play 21 minutes of footy on game day. Was that
with no scrutiny? Could you imagine if the Tigers or someone was paying someone $1 million to play 21 minutes?
Is Todd Payton, like, what is Todd Payton doing with Lolo? Is he saving him? Because he's like, well, we know we got this game. I'm not wrecking.
That was the excuse.
So what's the reason though?
No, but I suspect that he's not going to play more than 35 to 40 every week, and they want him out the door.
Really?
And rightly so. He's a legend up there, and as he should be, because in my opinion, he's the greatest forward I've ever seen. I think they want him out the door, but they can't just ship him out the door because they'll burn the place down. Well, more than normally, the whole place should be burnt down anyway. But,
you know. I was just going to say, please send him out. We can all burn the place down.
But I suspect that they want him gone, and they're trying to give him the gentle nudge. And I think you'll end up at the Roosters, and the Cowboys pay half his money, and the Roosters will get him back on track.
I always try to see these things from an accounting perspective, because I do wonder. Well, let's say he does go somewhere else and they have to pay freight, but they freeze up $500,000. Are they still going to get Lolo's current output for $500,000 from someone else? You know what I mean? Like, you don't offload someone unless you know you're going to get value elsewhere from the money you've got left over.
But I don't think they're in win. As much as people think they're a premiership contender, we don't agree. I don't think they're in win now mode. I think they don't. We all mocked them for years and years about the amount of great players they've let go over the years by signing their older players. I think they've got a lot of outstanding young forwards. They need to keep them. I think they're happy to play some freight to be able to have some more money to keep those guys, knowing that in 2 or 3 years' time, that's the future of the team. Because they've got a lot of great young, like Fiji and Tongan back rowers and middle forwards. And I think they're really focused on not losing those guys. So I think that, yeah, they're really trying to free up that money and free up the minutes to play the ones that are ready. And I think Lolo is going to be the casualty of that.
We watch this space to see how things develop in the latest episode of Housewives of Townsville. Hey,
Ooh, wouldn't that be an awful show? there'd be gaps in your teeth all over the place.
Hey, just before we get back to this weekend's game against the Cowboys, I mean, it was a weird round. Everybody was sitting on 0-5 until the Parramatta Eels summarily executed the Bulldogs, thankfully, on Saturday afternoon. Hey, mate, can I ask you, is Cameron Seraldo the most unscrutinised coach for no apparent reason in the NRL? Because everyone was really quick to tell you how rubbish Trent Barrett was at the Bulldogs, and Cameron Seraldo was coming out and celebrating that they won the final 20 minutes against the Eels on Saturday. That's not good. That's just not good at all. How many rounds do you give it before Gus Gould starts to worry about how tired Cameron Seraldo's looking?
You know what? You're right. Cameron Seraldo, he doesn't get the scrutiny he should get because he's Gus's man.
Yep.
But I actually think that Gus is far more tied to Seraldo than he was to Barrett. And I'll tell you what. The club was to Barrett. And I'll tell you why. Because Trent Barrett was getting paid first grade coach money, nothing special, you know, run of the mill money. The Dogs have signed Serrato at huge money for a rookie coach.
I mean
huge money. Like they're gonna, it's gonna cost them a fortune. And I know that even though they, you know, they've essentially got unlimited funds, but there's a budget where you can spend in your football department. And I know that the Dogs were against the wall a few years ago because they were still paying Dez out, but Dean Pay had still had some money owed to him. They're still giving Mick Potter something. Plus, they're paying Trent Barrett as the coach. Like, and I know their sponsors were really going, well, where's all this money going? You know, like we're pumping money into the club, but it's being spent on things that are now gone, and you can't then go get a good coach because you've got no more in your football department cap to spend. I think the Dogs are terrified of that happening again. So I think Gus is running the ultimate sort of cover for Serrato, because he doesn't want scrutiny in terms of people calling for his head.
Yep.
Because if they fire Serrato, they are up against it because that contract is massive.
Couple of other interesting results that I did want to ask you about, only quickly, if only because the Sharks historically don't beat top eight opposition. So is the Warriors...
So that proves the Warriors are no longer top eight.
Is their season effectively over?
Packing in Warriors fans, this is not your year.
But, you know, I am very reluctant to run protection for a team that's made four grand finals in a row and won three of them in a row. You know, they've got enough going in their favour, so fuck them. They don't need my help. But I've got to be honest with you, mate. You and I have seen some dynasties over our years. The great dynasty of the Eels back in the 80s, the Broncos of the 90s. You've got, the Storm, whatever you think about the two premierships they don't deserve. They still won four of them that you can't take away from them. Even the Roosters back-to-back, you know, great achievement. But all of those, except for maybe the Eels, all of those you can sort of run at with legitimate objective reasons as to why they had an unfair advantage. I really feel like the Panthers' success is something that all fans of rugby league should be celebrating. And we saw a post the other day, do the Panthers play too negative? I'm like, are you fucking serious? Like, is that how desperate you are to criticise the Panthers? That now after one loss, and it's one loss. They also lost the opening round last year, and
that's how Ivan sets them up. Ivan sets them up to peak in the middle of August.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really feels like it's not a low point for the rugby league media. There are much, much lower points that they've sort of reached. But it just feels like they're reaching for a sort of clickbait type article that's just a waste of everybody's time. That is not a criticism that you need to be throwing at the Penrith Panthers.
It's, you know, I've really sort of thought, and I've thought about this a lot, like the NRL have not made enough of Penrith's dynasty.
Because
how many times have we heard like people like Gus and that go, well, it's not fair, you've got to lose players because of the salary cap and, you know, you can't build. And the NRL should be going, no, the Penrith have done this exactly how this is designed to be done.
Yeah,
what they've done is they've built, and Gus was part of it, was built from the base, got the premiership team, lost plays because of the salary cap, trying to even the competition out, which it has. It's dragged some teams up, you know, and as much as the Dogs aren't any better, you know, they're still getting plays that are giving Dogs fans hope for the future. But they're still competitive. Like, they haven't dropped off. And even though they win the comp this year, they're still going to be a top three or four team at the worst. You know, to me, the NRL should be going, well, this is why how we set the league up is perfect, because you can be a dynasty. You don't have to cheat to be a dynasty, because no one suspects Penrith of cheating because they keep losing players.
Mm.
It's just, you know, we all made the jokes about, you know, Nathan Cleary, acne and that sort of stuff and you know, and drugs. But it was there was no evidence. We were just being dickheads about it.
Yeah.
The NRL should be screaming for the rooftops. This is exactly how this league should be. If you do it right, if you build your base, and yeah, Penrith have the junior base that a lot of clubs don't, understandable. But Penrith also don't have the other things in third-party deals to offer that other clubs do. It's the, you know, Penrith being dominant while Brisbane were down, should be the NRL going, see, the fucking system works.
Down the block. Inside for Elvis. Elvis.
Hey, mate, let's bring this home strong. Okay. Where can we win it against the Cowboys? And how do we win it? Because I think if we're going to win it, it's going to be Tigers round 2, 2023, 2.0. We'll win by 2 if we win it all. It's going to be ugly this weekend. Real ugly stuff.
Yeah, we win if we get the game low scoring for mine, because we've got KP in the locker to produce, you know, the 3 tries. We just need to keep them to 2. I think that the Cowboys play a certain way, and as I said earlier, they run and gun. But if you stop them from running and gunning, they've got a really soft underbelly, like we do, very much like we do. But I think if we match them in the middle, we can get them on the edges.
I think, unfortunately, there's really only three reasons for me, sorry. Because the first reason is obviously what you said in terms of, I think KP will bounce back. I think he'll be disappointed in himself about how round one went. I think he'll be determined.
I don't think KP's ever had a great game in Townsville ever. Like, I wonder if that's something that gnaws at him. You know, he never really got up there and stuck it up him.
Right, so actually that's probably 4 reasons now, because I did say in the off-season, Adam O'Brien really wants to get – he wants to – check these accomplishments off his list, and definitely winning in Townsville. I forgot to look it up. I still maintain we never won a Cowboys game up in Townsville during the Brown era. So I'm quite confident that we have not won in Townsville since 2015.
That's the thing. Like we don't ever really go up there as favourites. But the one time we did, remember we had a good lead. I remember Lachie Fitzgibbon scored a double. We had a good lead. It might have been 2020, I'd say. And we blew it and we threw it away. And we were a finals team and they were rubbish. And I reckon
it wasn't 2020. No, it wasn't 2020 because we were behind from the get go in that game. We were always chasing the game.
It must have been 21 then. And and yeah, we threw it away. We had a big early lead, and we went up there as red hot favourites. And as I said, I don't think there's been any other really competitive games until last year when we also threw it away.
And we should have won that. I mean, we really should. Anyway, let's not really about it. So I think the reason we can win, we really should win, is because we don't want our season to be over. KP's got it in him to produce the goods. I think O'Brien wants to win up there. I think he wants to get that out of the way. I think the other reasons why we win historically is that, as you sort of said, we've got a much bigger time to recover and rest. We've got a better turnaround, although that might be evened up a bit by the fact that we have to bus and plane up there. But anyway.
I reckon that gets slightly negated in the fact that it's not a rush trip.
Yeah.
So we can go up there a couple of days early and it won't affect anything because we've already had a full week to get ready.
Yep. But the other reason I actually think is that, funnily enough, the Cowboys aren't particularly strong in their home opener as well. And I am mindful of the fact that they lost 6-4 to the Dogs.
The Dogs last year, the year before, in 2022, wasn't it?
Last year. And it was in, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was in horrendous, horrendous conditions.
Yeah.
But, you know, we felt that home pressure at home in our, you know, big crowd, eager to please. And I just wonder if there's an opportunity for us to sort of turn the tables a little bit on North Queensland, you know,
as let I said, them they're, feel the they're pressure. They're very much like us, you know. Though if you let them play their game, they will rip us apart like we do in fans. But like us, yeah, you're right. If you can get under their skin at home and slow them down and, you know, expose their weaknesses, they can get a bit soft, like, as I said, as we do. There's no reason why, you on paper, like, people go, oh, such and such. You know, I know people don't rate our players, but there's no position on that park where I go, well, they're going to dominate us there.
Mm.
Not one.
I've just done a recheck. We definitely did not win a game up in Townsville during the Brownie era. So, yeah, we're looking to break a 9-year streak here. And, I thought for some reason, streaks like that are actually sometimes reason why I'm like, maybe it's because we're due. Maybe it's time for us to win up in Townsville.
We break the St. George duty last year, didn't we?
Exactly right. Yeah, exactly. I said after Thursday night as well that as disappointing as a lot of the areas were that I thought we let ourselves down, funnily enough, it was the area, as long as I'm sort of confident that the doubt in the in our, you know, structures hasn't, you know, infected us completely. One thing I will say is that I felt like the deficiencies I found in our game on Thursday night, I actually do think they're quick fixes. They are things that you can turn around quickly. And it's just little stuff like, you know, maintaining possession, holding the ball when you have it, making sure you get out of your in goal when you're returning the ball. I want to talk a little bit more about, because we've sort of discussed how the four halfbacks thing didn't work, but we haven't really talked about, I thought our kicking game was poor. And again, I don't know if they were directed to kick that way, but I think that's something that they can quickly turn around when we go to Townsville to say, all right, whatever we tried didn't work. We can try a couple of different things and go back to what did work for us with our kicking game. Like I said, I think you're right. It wasn't a disaster on Thursday night, and more so because I think that there are small changes that we can make that at least give us a good chance going up to Townsville for round two.
A little 1%er in regards to the kicking game, kicking for touch on a penalty. So I assume, and I think I'm right in saying that Jacko's not doing the touch kicking there because they want to do as little kicking as possible because of his leg, and that's understandable. So Gamble was doing that kicking, and seriously, mate, like he was almost kicking it backwards there at stages. Like we're just giving 20 and 30 meters away every time, and you just can't do that. Like you can't in tough, hot, humid conditions against a team that'll scrap for everything. You can't kick it at 10 meters when you should be kicking at 40. It's just little things like that, and the overall kicking game was poor because we know Rapana's got a mistake in him. We didn't test him. There was there were no spiral bombs. There was, standing up at unders. There was no, Phoenix went for that 40-20 when it just wasn't on. Like,
It just wasn't on.
It was just not on. Like, mate, we've got four halfbacks on the field and we can't kick the ball. Like, what? It's just so nice, isn't it?
I'm reliving some of the dumb things that we actually did do on Thursday night, like, you know, the kickouts on the pull from kickoff, failing to kick. I think we failed to kick the 10 meters at one point. The worst one, though,
twice we did that.
Worst easily was Tyson Grant Gamble passing into Daniel Sofidi's chest after the Tyson Frizzell try. As I relive it now, I've actually forgotten how dumb we actually were on Thursday night. And I think that's what's reminded me is that I don't think that Thursday night is this team. I don't know what was going on with them, and I don't for a second think that is this team. And
it's a Canberra thing, but isn't it? Like, we one year they're shit against them, the next year they're shit against us. It just seems to be out rolled with them.
But it's where I actually do get some confidence against, you know, for our round two clash is that, well, whatever we saw on Thursday is not us. And I've got enough confidence in this team that they'll remind us come Saturday that that's not them. And, you know, they can put in a more convincing performance, go up to Townsville. Maybe we can ambush them, come home with 2 points and kick on for the rest of the season.
And I've said to you many times, the number one discrepancy in terms of form is round one to round two, more upsets in round two than any other thing. Because teams, you never get your true form early in the season. Teams overcorrect. Teams that play well get a bit ahead of themselves. Teams that play badly, are a touch more desperate because they want to be 0-2 because the implications of 0-2 sort of basically rules you out of being a top four team. It would not shock me to see it be turned around straight away. And I also don't think a win is a must, but there has to be a big improvement in the standard.
Just quickly before we do wrap up, mate, are there any other games that are jumping out at you? Because I do want to ask you about the Rabbitohs-Broncos game. Jai Arrow's gone. Looks like for the season. Rabbitohs, mate, not a lot's going their way. They are up against it for Thursday's game against the Broncos. And the only other one I wanted to point to was I think the Panthers-Eels game is even more interesting than normal because I don't think the Panthers season obviously isn't over at 0-2, but it's a lot harder even for them if they can't get over a rampant Eels who had their number last year. So I think there's a couple of really interesting games coming up this weekend that round two into the season, the competition's already looking very spicy.
Yeah, the other one, Melbourne Warriors. Now that's a game that'll tells me where both those two teams are at. Because I'm with you. I didn't think the Warriors were. A lot of people pencil them in as top four in premiers. I don't think that. I think they're a bottom half of the eight team. But I also think Melbourne without Munster, they could start 2-0. Really sets their season up. I didn't recognise myself. I think South's premiership window is shut and they're in full rebuild mode and they don't know yet. Because they got nothing below. Like, they've got four or five superstars and nothing else. Like, literally nothing. And which is weird to say considering they were, you know, national reserve grade champions last year. But, and I've maintained it many times, reserve grade standard of team is no indication of what you got. All that says to me is you've got a lot of guys that aren't quite ready for first, that aren't quite good enough for first grade, but are too good for cup. And to me, Souths are like that. And I said that about Canberra too. To me, Canberra, from probably player 7 to player 30 on their roster, are all the same. And I think Souths are like that too. They've got absolute superstars at the top and nothing underneath other than guys that are, you know, the reserve grade, upper reserve grade standard.
Hey, it's just funny. I know I'm a bit obsessed with the Panthers at the moment. It's just very interesting to me. Panthers are $1.39 favourites against the Eels on Friday night. The Eels are $3.03. So yeah. Gamble responsibly, everybody.
Just I think Paramount at 1-4 was a better centre. And not because I'm saying they're going to win. I just, you know, I'm a punter that likes a bit of value. And in terms of value, that's, yeah, with their record, yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening all the way to the end. As usual, everybody, we do appreciate all three of our listeners who download the pod. Enjoy the week, enjoy the footy, and we'll see you on the socials, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Sports Best Friends would like to thank you for listening right to the end. You are our kind of people. Find other great sports podcasts in our family by subscribing. And remember, social media isn't a bad place. You just need to follow the right people.